The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 24th of November, 2020. On the podcast today, Vadim Alexander talks about COVID testing stocks and Tissue Regenics. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent, now the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about how to store Bitcoin and crypto funds, amongst other things. Plus, I also have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'd also see lots of other content, including new Formix appoints non-executive director Dr. Julian Gilbert. There's one there on Byzant. There's one there on Vesarion. There's a video there with Paul and Christopher Mills, of course, Paul Hill and Christopher Mills. And, of course, our COVID-19 index, biggest rise of the day. It's a turnaround. It's gone from red to blue or green. Depends on how you look at it. Depends what platform you're on. Avacta Group, up 4.6% to 114. Biggest faller. In fact, it's a couple of the COVID testing stocks there today, actually. It's Amiga Diagnostics, Novacyt, and also at the bottom there is a Tech Capital, down 8%, 11.5%. Obviously not COVID testing stock. That's the biggest faller. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Healthcare at SP Angel.
How are you doing, Justin?
I'm good, thanks, fella. I like the way you're trying to meet my enthusiasm there. Because normally you're quite laid back, I don't know. But it's good. Hey, I'm going to say something controversial now. I want you to challenge this, right? Yeah. I think testing, as in testing for COVID, will no longer be with us after the first quarter of next year.
As in no more testing, you think?
No more testing, no.
Oh, I think that's a big challenge.
Yeah, I know. That's what I say. It's controversial. This is why I think this, right? If you look at the efficacy and the safety of the current vaccines we have out now from Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca, right? They're all higher than seasonal flu efficacy, and pretty much safety is pretty much the same. So they're more effective than the seasonal flu jabs we have, which are around 40 to 60% efficacy, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't have any tests for that, pretty much. And so once the vaccine, if vaccines are working and we are distributing them, why would we need testing? If within, yeah. I mean, they've said, you know, even Matt Hancock, who I'm not a big fan of, said we're going to get back to normal by Easter next year. So if we're back to normal, we know they're working, these vaccines are working, why do we need testing anymore?
Yeah, so basically, so in the first instance, I don't think we're all going to get vaccinated by the end of Q1 necessarily, so that there's some risk there. In principle, I agree with you. I want us to get back to normal, but I just don't. I think the rollout is a bit more complex than people imagine it to be. But you're right.
Especially with this government. This government. If anyone can mess up the vaccination program, this government can. But I agree. Listen, nothing ever runs smoothly. Like they say, it'll be all done by Easter next year. I know nothing runs smoothly. But I don't understand. When I invest in businesses, and I talk about investing, mm-hmm. not trading, I have to see a path to, you know, some kind of value generation lasting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe, you know, not less than 6 months, definitely. Because then, and that's why I think that the COVID testing stocks now are having a hard time of it. You know, they're saying, hang on, if they're saying we're back to normal in Easter, where does that leave us? Where does it, you know, how much more revenue are we going to generate? But, and if you haven't launched the testing, if you're testing, you know, tech is not commercial already, then you've got a very short runway to get up and running and working and approved by the regulatory authorities, you know, and distributing it.
Yeah, no, so look, so a couple of things. One is nobody ever had any doubts about the COVID peak testing wave being right in the middle of it right now. Mm. I think we all have, you and I have always discussed it as such. And the question is, when does the wave end, which is what your question is. You're saying by the end of Q1, there won't be any COVID testing. I doubt that's going to be the case.
That's now, extreme, I think. Now, but what I'm saying is, I think if not, I mean, it'll still probably be testing. But I think once the vaccines are proven to work, if they do work, like they say they work, and it literally is, you know, reducing the amount of people. Like, first of all, the first strata of people that will get vaccinated would be the most vulnerable healthcare workers. And so if the most vulnerable don't end up in hospital because they've had a vaccine, then the hospitals are fine. They've got plenty of capacity. We can unlock the economy. Like I said, if they keep working, if these vaccines are successful, I know there'll be have to be tests at the start if they are working. But how long do you have to realise before we know they're working? Because they'll have vaccinated millions of people within 3 months. They'll know pretty soon if they're working, won't they?
So yeah. So look. First of all, the vaccines, just so you understand, they have boosters. So there's already like a 1 month deployment. I think they're 3 weeks apart between the two vaccination. You get vaccinated twice.
So you need
the first dose, then you need a second dose. I think it's 3 weeks later. So just think about the logistics, okay, of vaccinating an entire population.
Yeah.
We couldn't even test an entire population. We couldn't even get testing for it. You know what I'm, do you hear what I'm saying? So you can imagine that testing is a lot easier than vaccinating, right? Getting a test on a shelf, pulling it off the shelf, you know, even the off-the-shelf tests that we're talking about here, the ones that were the lateral flow tests, only just emerged for this trial in Liverpool that we had only less than a month ago, right? Do you see what I'm trying to say? So you know, you're right. So there's the government itself, which has had many U-turns and problems deploying testing. It doesn't bode very smoothly. We're not expecting a smooth transition to vaccination within a month. I think that would be a wrong assumption. And that's not just talking about the government. You know, even if everything went smoothly, I still don't think it would be done within a month or 2 months. Okay, so we're expecting, for example, I think the Moderna vaccine, they've ordered 5 million doses. Again, requires two doses, so that's 2.5 million people. And then the I think there's 40 million doses ordered for the Pfizer vaccine, and then 100 million doses ordered for the AstraZeneca vaccine. Okay, so the big hope is the AstraZeneca one, because that's the one that'll be deployed for mass deployment, right? And when we're talking about testing, you don't stop testing until you're confident that we've reached some sort of herd immunity. Okay, that is why testing will continue, in my opinion, well into 2021. Okay, it's not going to disappear in after Q1.
Yeah, but let me say one thing.
We're not going to turn the testing
no,
off.
No, I know that. But what I'm saying is,
that's just not going to happen.
What I'm saying is, if you saw how much money is being splashed on tracing and testing, it's ridiculous. Like, I think it was like $22 billion. I saw the figure was, which is more than like sort of big infrastructure networks and railway projects and all this stuff. But if we're seen to have early success with this, and literally. Like I said, 5 million doses from Pfizer. That's enough. That's 2.5 million people. That's enough to vaccinate the most vulnerable, because that's how many there are in this country. Now, if we see a massive drop-off in the people being admitted to hospital with serious problems with COVID, then that's going to have, I think, a change in sentiment massively. Already we've seen the change in sentiment anyway. We've seen, the peak in these testing stocks, and they're having a hard time now. So people are realizing there's a very limited foresight here, revenue generation, value generation, and it's maybe 12 months maximum, but that's pretty good case,
So rather than I think what I'm doing is arguing against you when I'm actually, I see exactly what you see, except that I don't see it on the same timelines.
So no, exactly.
We'd always discussed that H2 and H1 21, so H2 20, H1 21, so the last 6 months of this year, first 6 months of next year, as being the peak diagnostic period. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I would say the real argument that one has to assess for a company like Novacyt, okay, is what happens after that. That's the cue. That's the question. Now, whether we get it right by one quarter or not, it matters, but it really, if you get 6 months of consecutive testing at peak testing, and again, in those 6 months, you're probably looking at peak testing January, February, and then starting to drop off, and then dropping off far more in the second half.
I agree. A timeline can be longer. Yeah. This is assuming vaccination go well, distribution goes well, there's no issues. I'm thinking, I just saw that statement from Matt Hancock yesterday. I thought, we're back to normal by Easter, he said. And I thought, really?
Wasn't the last time we heard something like that from the government saying everything will be back to normal by Christmas?
Yeah.
Didn't you remember that? I'm just quoting. I'm not saying it's hard to tell. They have massive challenges. I know that. It's not an easy situation. It's just all I'm saying is let's not put dates on things like so aggressively because, you know, the very same words came out of the same government's, you know, mouth earlier and it hasn't been met, right? So here we are. We're in peak, virus again, probably through Christmas, January, February, because those are the tough winter months. Vaccine will start getting deployed hopefully in December, one of them, the Moderna one, I think, you know, Moderna and Pfizer first. And you're right, targeting the most vulnerable, but not receiving all the doses all at once, right? We're not getting 40 million doses of Pfizer vaccine on day one. That's just not going to happen. Right? Nor are we getting 100 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine on day one. So deployment is going to take months. Okay. Yeah. And in a perfect world, maybe by the end of Q1, we'll have a good chunk of the population vaccinated, and there will still be testing well into Q2. This is in your scenario, in your ideal scenario, which I agree is possible. It's just not likely. That's all I'm saying, you know? Mm-hmm. And then what we're talking about is we're kind of splitting hairs about months, when the reality is you still need to order and procure tests in the event that you get vaccination slightly wrong, right? You can't, you don't order tests and then imagine that, basically what I'm trying to say is the government will not forfeit testing until they know they have vaccination right. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a lead time. There's a lead time to both. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It's not like they're not going to say, wait, let's put the brakes on testing. We think we're going to get there with vaccination.
That doesn't
work like that.
I'm just wondering as well, make sure
you're procured for, you know, a good runway and then you see what happens. So you don't get into a situation where, oh my God, the vaccination's not working out to plan. Oh, but we stopped buying tests because we thought we were going to be okay on vaccine. That doesn't work. No one makes mistakes like that time and time again. Some governments do, but let's hope they don't.
Yeah, and also, what's good for some of these testing companies is that the government, I've seen, you know, some of those contracts they're handing out are for multi-year contracts. So I'm assuming there's a cutoff there. I'm assuming they can say, okay, listen, there's a clause where they can opt out. Because having said that, the way this government is spending money, I don't know if there is. A company could not even launch a testing kit, maybe, and get paid for 3 years. I don't know.
Look, you're absolutely correct. Look, it's very risky to be investing in diagnostic stocks that are not manufacturing anything yet. Okay, why? Because we all agree the window is a window. Okay, how long that window is, it doesn't matter if you're not selling anything. And you're not planning to sell anything in the coming months because that's how long, you know, we're talking about within the next year, right? Mm-hmm. That window, the peak sale will have passed, right? Mm-hmm. I'm confident the vaccines will work in time. The question is, you know, give or take a quarter, that's what we're talking about here. So we both agree there is a window of peak sales. And then after that, they'll drop off to a new normal. And then the debate is, what's that new normal? So for a company like Novacyt, I'd say the risk in estimates is looking at what you think that new normal is going to be, okay? That is where the risk is. So it's post-21, you know what I mean, 2021. So the back end of 2021 and onwards that you want to be saying, what are the estimates for that period and what will be the new normal in testing? My belief is the new normal in testing will be higher than what we had before because the whole world has changed in terms of how we perceive viruses, even the flu virus. And we will need to know what, you know, people will want, in hospitals will want to know what a patient is presenting with, vaccinated or not, right? Yeah. Because even the best vaccines, if there is still a fraction of society that will suffer from the condition, right? Mm. And you when someone comes in presenting with flu-like symptoms in a hospital, this is what I was, you know, telling you about, like these panels of respiratory virus tests that'll distinguish between what kind of virus you have. Do you have the flu virus? Do you have the COVID virus? Do you have another COVID virus? Or do you have another respiratory virus? So that's what I'm talking about, the new normal of testing, which I think will be the way the world operates post this major shock of a pandemic virus, okay?
I think
there will be a new normal. But that's a discussion separate to the discussion you're debating, which is how long will the peak last? So again, companies that are capitalizing on it today are winners already. Companies that haven't launched a test or are developing a test, I'm not sure they're going to be winners because there's just not enough time for them to capitalize on the moment. And they're not embedded enough in the healthcare system to benefit from selling future tests into the system, like, say, Novacyt is.
Yeah, but that's it. Do you know what? Already there's a preferred list of, obviously, suppliers to NHS contractually. And to me, you know, if those companies are supplying, you know, very good quality testing and tech, then they'll just be, their contracts will just be extended. Rather than search for new companies, maybe, that they don't know how high quality their tests are, or they don't know them, don't work with them, that's going to be the preferred route, isn't it? The people you've worked with already that you're happy with, and, you know, that have successful tests, that's the preferred. So Novacyt, for example, already supply these to different routes into the market. They, you know, the route is theirs, commerciality route is theirs, isn't it? You know?
Correct. But you're absolutely right. No one's debating whether there is a, that right now we're in peak testing. That peak testing will not last forever. And, you know, the debate of whether it'll be Q1, Q2, or Q3 is a nice problem to have. You know what I mean? It's a reality that I think a government, most governments, including the UK government, won't risk overestimating. It's better to overestimate on testing and to get it right than to take any risk of saying, well, we're not going to procure in the hopes that the vaccine works. I mean, that's just insane, don't you think? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
Wouldn't you procure and give yourself buffer in the event that vaccines either don't work like they're supposed to, in because vaccines behave differently when you're rolling out against 60 million people versus, you know, 10 or 20,000 people, right? So you need to see in a real world context how your vaccines are working. They're going to work because we have multiple vaccines. We know we're going to get there. But the question is, you know, it might be a little bit of a two steps forward, one step back for 2021.
I
buy your view in a best case scenario.
I'm just putting a view out there as an extreme view, and I don't think it'll go anywhere near within 3 years. It'll never go that smooth, you know. But what I'm saying is, you know, when investing, you look for foresight of earnings, you know, future earnings, and it's all based on future earnings potential. And when that future earnings, you know, that future is very short, then that will basically, you know, you will trade below, you know, that market value because you haven't got earnings for, generation for a long period of time. It's coming to an end. Anyway, listen, I've sidetracked you massively. I know you want to talk about tissue regenics, which is going to be maybe a benefactor of us getting back to normal, yeah?
Absolutely. Just so you know, Justin, I completely agree with you. I think the investment case on diagnostics was always – there was always an element of a window of opportunity. That was, you know, you and I have always said that. And the window may be closing faster is what you're suggesting. It may not be, but it's always going to be, any investor has to
There's a big if with it. What I'm saying,
isn't going to persist at this level for more than a year probably from now.
I think we all
agree on that.
I'm saying that window will close quicker if, now this is a massive if, the vaccines are rolled out smoothly, and if they work as they've said done in trials. Now there's two big ifs there. So you know, and if the trials are going back, tests going back, say it's working, it's actually working, and we're getting out there, then I think the window will start closing because hang on, do we need to spend, you know, 10 billion on tests when the vaccines are working very well? Anyway, let's go to tissue regenics.
No problem. So look, on this theme, so. We all know that, so for example, testing has this wave that's going to come and go. But what else is going to happen is that, as you might imagine, all of these routine surgeries have been, we're hearing about it every day in terms of the NHS. There's a massive backlog in routine surgeries. So because of COVID, everything was disrupted in terms of healthcare as well. So we expect a pretty big echo in terms of routine surgeries. So you'll have the COVID crisis will subside, and then there'll be an echo of routine surgeries that have been pent up over the last year because people have delayed knee surgery, they've delayed, you know, even all kinds of like heart valve surgeries, all kinds of surgeries that, you know. So tissue regenics is firmly in that camp of a healthcare company that provides products into more routine-based surgeries. They have orthopedic products, dental products. I mean, dentistry, for example, everyone's been stuck not seeing, you know, well, the level of dental provision has been massively reduced for a year, right? So mm-hmm. you're probably going to see this big echo, and, you know, once the vaccines are shown to work and everything slowly starts to return to normal, well, that pent up demand is going to start to feed through the system. So there's a suite of healthcare companies that were overly maybe punished during the COVID crisis, but that we would expect to see, an increase in demand in the coming years post-crisis. Mm-hmm. So Tissue Regenics is a perfect example. You've seen a good share price rally. I hold this stock. I like this stock a lot. It's been overly punished for other reasons. It was a stock that was part of the Woodford stable. And as you know, there was a big overhang once Woodford's fund collapsed. And that drove its shares down to a really an all-time low. And there was a big raise done for the company, so they've recapitalized at 20.25p. Stock price is around 0.5p right now, so it's come back a little bit, but it's still at historic lows. It has a lot of capital, and it's in the right space at the right time now, in my opinion. That second wave, that echo post COVID of routine surgeries, is going to start filtering through to companies like Tissue Regenics.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And just looking at the chart a sec. So, Tissue Regenics. Oh, okay. I'm in the wrong part there. Oh, yeah. Okay. I like that. It's flattened out there. So, yeah. It, from nice base there, didn't it? What I like about that is, like, for ages, it was bouncing along at 0.3, 0.3, and in the range there between 0.3 and 0.4. And now it's basically just broke up above that range, and it's now almost 0.5, 0.49, whatever. So yeah, it's broken up, and it's literally just a smidge below the 200-day moving average, which of course is seen as the bull bear line. So cool. Yeah. So what's the big? Is there any big milestones you can think of? Any bits of news coming out that you think will push it higher?
So this is all kind of a revenue expectations play. Now, right now, I expect the second half of this year to be slightly underperforming because of the COVID crisis, which was all, I think, it's priced in. The company is talking about it. They're taking measures against it. They have a facility, I think it's in San Antonio, Texas, which was hit hard. Everybody knows that this company was in crisis mode for that period. They recapitalized over that period, so they're okay on cash. Mm-hmm. And the question is how quickly and aggressively the bounce back is in 2021, 22. In terms of revenues, because of all these surgeries that haven't taken place. So the demand for their products should see a nice bounce once the COVID crisis goes by. So I expect second half of this year to be lackluster. Okay, so probably not too dissimilar to the first half, maybe even slightly worse. We'll wait and see, because it was acknowledged and priced in, I think, that a bad year was expected because of the COVID crisis. But it's what happens in 21, 22, that's going to be all about revenue upside surprises. That's what I'm hoping to see.
Yeah, cool, marvelous stuff. TRX is ticking. I like the chart there. It's good. And you say they've got some funds there? They got some money there? Are they okay?
Yeah, so they I think they raised something like 12 million or something not too long ago, over the summer. So they're completely, their market cap, that's the other thing, is the price. It's the price that I like to, even at these levels, I think it's about 30 million market cap today.
Yeah.
It's a company that's had over $50 million invested into it by Woodford. So he's championed the whole product development. Now it's all about product rollout. They have products that are selling. Their revenues were, I think the expectation was something like $6 million in first half, or roughly annualized about 12 million, 11, 12 million. And then the hope is to see that eventually double in this echo. So mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but that's the bet. If you see it at doing 12 million roughly, say if you annualize the first half, in a bad, really bad year, you can imagine what they can do in a good year.
Yeah. So they raised gross 14.6 million on the 22nd of May at 0.25. They're now almost double that. So yeah. Cool.
There you go.
Marvellous stuff. Excellent stuff, Vadim. Good as always. And we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He is the crypto trader. It's a new type of superhero. That's why he wears this, you know, this all-in-one suit there with a B in the front there. And what colour is your superhero suit, Glenn?
Orange, of course, the colour of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's it, yes, orange. And I know it's with gold and orange. It's very bright on the eye. But there we are. Glenn, we've
I'm feeling like a superhero today, actually.
Good.
Because, because Bitcoin's price is going through the roof and everybody's suddenly interested in me again. Yeah. You know, people are, like, asking me questions, treating me like an expert. They treated me like... The crap on their shoe for the past 3 years while we were in a bear market.
You can't say the word shoe. Do you have, every time someone buys your book, say online, a little ding, like a cash till register happening, effect, sound effect, when something goes into your account? How does it work, actually?
That would be good.
When you sell a book, does it per month, do you get paid, say, what happens? Does it come by the publisher? How does that work?
It's all via the publisher. So everybody takes their cuts, like Amazon obviously take the biggest cut, and then publishers and everybody else, and then, you know, a few pennies basically dribble back to the poor author. Mm-hmm. And in this case, actually, because, as I said, because everybody's suddenly interested in Bitcoin again, my book is now sold out on Amazon, and it says here that it's not in stock for a number of days, which is really annoying. Because this is the time when people most seem to want it. My book was shooting up the ranking. Well, actually, it's still doing okay in the rankings, but...
how much is it on Amazon? What's the price on Amazon?
So people are still pre-ordering it, and I guess they're ordering it on Kindle. You can still get it on Kindle, folks.
I'll sell mine if it can make you a profit. Can I get 50 for tenner? Oh, I got mine free, yes. That's a more profit, that is.
Maybe £1.50 profit, I reckon, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, and when do you get the money? Is it once a year or once a month? If any money's coming.
Well, it varies from publisher to publisher, but maybe once every 6 months is normal.
Oh, okay.
Some people who've written books and listening to this might go, "You'll be ripped off, mate. You should get it once a month." Yeah. I don't know. I'm not that fussed. Like, you put it this way.
That's because you make loads of money trading, Glenn. That's why.
That's how I make my money.
Busy,
no, mate. You don't make money from selling books. Okay, yeah. Let's get that clear. Books are a niche, when they're selling really well, like mine. We're talking about pittance. It's not. I'm not doing this for the money.
It opens doors, though, doesn't it?
I wrote that book for the evangelism. I wanted to evangelize about.
Yeah, but not really that, but. It opens doors, Glenn. It gives you an air of authority. You know, people come to you and you've got a book to sell, you've got a product there. It's good. It gets you on shows like this. You know, you wouldn't be on here if it wasn't for your book, you know? Who's Glenn Goodman? He's got a book. Oh, he's got a book, is he? Ooh, very flash. Ooh. Let's get Glenn on there. He's got a book.
It's true. It did get you all excited, all flustered you were.
So anyway, we got a question here from a listener on Twitter there.
Yeah. Said,
if you get a chance tomorrow on the podcast, I'd like to hear your opinion on what's the best way to hold cryptocurrency. I'd say in your hands. Yeah. No, in fact, no, it's digital, so it's not good. So that's why I haven't got a book out. And hashtag GBTC and hashtag ETHE. Thinking ISA compatibility, that's just in brackets this bit, thinking ISA compatibility could be a big benefit, close brackets. Always enjoy your discussion, exclamation mark. Thanks,
yeah,
Tom.
The exclamation mark's important.
That's from Tom Noteman. That's a good name, Tom Noteman.
It is. Can I just give a big shout out to Tom Noteman?
No,
you didn't give a big shout. You just mentioned that he, and to his massive.
How big about you? My volume was as loud as yours. I said Tom Noteman, good name. Why is yours a big shout?
You're going to do a big shout.
Tom! Yes! You're the man, Tom! Tom! Note man! He is the note man! He's going to be a superhero, the note man. He takes notes everywhere he goes.
Well, anyway, so he's asking about, as you said, hashtag GBTC and hashtag ETHE. And what he's referring to here are the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust and the Grayscale Ethereum Trust. Grayscale are the company.
You haven't answered the first question yet. What's the best way to hold it, though? Best way to hold it?
Yeah, hold on. I'll get onto that.
But
he's
easy
asking
bit,
specifically about those because of the ISA compatibility. Okay. So the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is a share. And you can buy it like a normal share, and it invests purely in Bitcoin. So it's effectively a bet on the price of Bitcoin. And similarly, the Grayscale Ethereum Trust is a bet on the price of Ethereum directly. So or not directly, indirectly. But the point is, you can buy it as a share, therefore you can stick it in an ISA. So that's why he's interested in doing it that way. There are pros and cons. Grayscale are quite well respected now. They're the biggest company of their kind in the world, and they've been growing very, very fast this past year or so as well. Loads of assets flying into their fund. But what I'm saying, I guess, is that some people might consider it a safer way to invest because it's all on the stock market and the stock markets are regulated and blah, blah, blah. There are a couple of downsides. There is the premium to net asset value, which you often get with investment trusts. Anybody who invests in investment trusts in this country may well know that, you know, they hold a basket of assets, a bunch of different shares.
Is that a virtual basket? Not a real basket, surely, digital currency.
You're not literally a wicker basket.
But. Yeah, because I was saying, it's hard to hold the digital currencies in a basket, an actual basket. In fact, Tom, take note of that, Mr. Noteman.
So you invested in investment trust, which invests in various shares, as I have done many times in the past. You know, there are loads of them on the UK stock market, for example, invest in various shares. But sometimes, because you get an actual share price for the trust itself, which can go up or down, sometimes it's worth more than the value of all the shares that the trust holds, but sometimes it trades at a discount, which means that the actual price of the trust is less than the value of all the shares that it holds. And so then people go, oh, that's a bargain, I've got to buy that up. So you can be at a discount or a premium. Problem with Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, it's usually at a premium, and it is at the moment. So basically, you would be paying, in order to get the equivalent of one Bitcoin, you would be paying, one Bitcoin is currently trading as we speak, higher than it almost ever has been, at about $19,000 per coin. But if you bought the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, you would have to pay $20,000+ in order to get $19,000 worth of Bitcoin exposure.
Yeah, laugh, so
that doesn't sound like
laugh.
A great deal.
No.
Sound like a great deal, but at the same time, always trades at a premium. Like for the past year, it's been trading at a premium anyway. So you could look at it as, oh, well, I'll buy it at a premium, but then I'll get to sell it at a premium anyway. But that's not guaranteed, of course. You know, who knows what the future could hold? It could suddenly start trading at a discount if Bitcoin suddenly becomes very unpopular.
Yeah, I'd wait for that, Tom. Essentially, It's ironic. Thing is, the oldest adage in the world for stock markets pretty much is buy low, sell high. All right. Now, the way that the emotion is set up in our brains, it's the opposite of that. Because, you know, when everyone gets excited about Bitcoin, like you say, it's getting high, people will start buying it and that pushes up higher. But you realize you should have been buying it when people were selling it and no one was interested and just going, and if it's going to crash to the floor, that's when to buy stocks. That's when to get, you know, that's how to get a good return. You know, so it's odd, isn't it?
The best time is when Justin is taking the piss out of me all the time. You'll remember all those months
ago. You've sworn twice now, Glenn. What's going on?
What a waste of time.
Hang on. You said the C word and the P word. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, just because Bitcoin's flying high, don't get more high and mighty and clever. Because your bookseller.
I'm getting a little bit smug now.
Just because your bookseller stock. You know, don't think you're Mr. Big Bitcoin. Isn't it odd though? That's the thing.
You know, Waterstones.
That's the thing. What are you doing? Checking Waterstones stock levels.
Checking if it's in.
This is good content for the podcast. Glenn live now checking Waterstones stock levels for his book. What's it like, Glenn?
Let's have a look.
It's in stock. Yeah, it's in stock, but the shop is shut.
It's in stock at Waterstones.
The shop is shut. It's
online,
lockdown, isn't it?
Oh, to buy online. It's on the in stock pretty much everywhere to buy online, just not Amazon.
Wow. Anyway, listen. Isn't that the thing? The oldest adage and the hardest thing to conquer in investing is getting the right price. Because when no one wants it, that's the time to buy it. And when I say when no one wants it, that includes you as well. You know, but you should be contrarian, thinking, I want it. Because it's like a market, isn't it? You know, you go to a market when there's too much being supplied there. People say, I don't have to want any more of that. Think, well, if I buy it now and wait until there's a bit of a surge in demand and there's lack of stock, then surely that's a good. Yeah. Then people, you know, that's the way you should be. You should be the opposite of the rest of the market. That's how to make money.
That's
simple,
the
buy low
investing
side.
Kind of thesis, isn't it, generally?
Well, that's how you make money. Don't buy when everyone else is buying like crazy. It's like,
what is it what Warren Buffett says?
He says,
when everybody's scared.
Oh, no, it
wasn't. Yeah, I'm typing it in now because he had a good phrase about this. When fear buys,
the streets,
something like that.
Buy when,
That's it. Be fearful. It's wise for investors to be fearful when others are greedy and be greedy when others are fearful.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe all these. I know he's a clever man. But, you know, there's one thing being clever.
He just summed up what you just said. So yeah, why are you disagreeing with him?
Buy low, sell high. But I know he's a clever man in investing. But making up quotes, catchy quotes, is a different part of the brain, I think. Different skill set, do you think? But he seems to be very good at both. Very good quotes and very good investing. It's like, yeah. He's a very clever guy. But if it really is him, I think people attribute quotes to him. And he says, I didn't say that. Oh, you knew? I don't know what it was. Can we just say it's for you, because it's very good and you're good. And I think that's what, you know, it's like a rolling snowball, really, isn't it? It picks up, you know, gathers the moss.
Yeah, did he really say that? That's a good point. Actually, a lot of the things that are attributed to Keynes, John Maynard Keynes, some of the best investment quotes I've recently found out are just apocryphal. They're not true. He probably didn't say them at all.
Yeah. So anyway, Glenda, any news out this week on Bitcoin? Anything worth looking at? I mean, do you see?
Oh, hold on. Before we do the load, we haven't fulfilled Tom Noteman's brief.
It's taking a long time, isn't it? Tom, are you taking notes? Noteman.
Well, right. So we've done the, because he asked what's the best way to hold Bitcoin. So yeah, I've talked about the Bitcoin Trust. Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which you can buy on the, I think it's on US stock exchanges. So your ISA needs to be able to buy US shares in order to do that, and not all ISAs, not all brokers are set up with that option to buy every single US share under the sun. But some do, some don't. So it depends on your ISA. So that's the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. Other ways to buy Bitcoin. You can get exposure to it still, but not for very long, on through spread bets and CFDs on platforms like IG, CMC Markets, that kind of thing. But that's going to be banned to retail investors from the beginning of next year. So that's not a great deal of use, but you can still do it at the moment. So that's buying the derivatives of Bitcoin. And then we get on to buying Bitcoin itself. Most people buy it using an established company like Coinbase, which is based in the United States. They buy their Bitcoin through there, and you can either keep your Bitcoin in a wallet within Coinbase's own website, and all companies like Coinbase, they usually have their own kind of in-house wallets. But the problem there is you're kind of exposed to what the future of that company. If Coinbase went bust, they would say, well, we keep your Bitcoin money separate from our own money. But we all know when companies go bust, all kinds of terrible things often happen. So you can't 100% guarantee that your Bitcoin's still going to be there. But the beautiful thing about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is that you can keep them in your own external wallets, what we call a cold wallet, which is either just a piece of paper that you can print off the internet if you really know what you're doing, or you can buy a device like a Ledger. If you look up Ledger, L-E-D-G-E-R, there are physical devices, basically a kind of special USB drive so that you plug it into your computer.
I've got one, actually. I've never used it.
Have you?
Never used it.
Well, you should learn how to if you have Bitcoin.
I don't want to. What
are
you doing?
It's a great way of keeping your Bitcoin safe.
Nah,
you
then, not.
You effectively download your Bitcoin, or at least the information about how to access your Bitcoin. You download it onto the drive, and then you can unplug it from the internet so nobody can ever hack it, because it's just sitting in your house. But the only problem with those things is that people sometimes lose them. So it's like they're so worried about keeping their Bitcoin safe, so they'll put it onto, you know, get it onto a laptop or onto a ledger or whatever, and then, you know, there are these famous stories about the laptop being thrown away or the ledger being thrown away. Probably less likely to happen these days because Bitcoin's worth a lot more money. It was more in the early days of Bitcoin.
I just think I prefer to keep it online. I prefer to keep it online somewhere rather than a ledger, because I don't know what happens in my house, kids and stuff. I just wouldn't, you know, where's that little thing gone? Oh, I've used that. I wiped it clean or something. I don't know. Oh, really? Or I threw it out because we had too many of them. What are you talking about? So I'd prefer to keep it online somewhere. But hang on, when can I start buying Bitcoin with PayPal then? When's that going to start?
I was going to get onto that. Well,
come on then, because
it's
just taking a long time.
Well, there's so many different ways. You know, even, you can keep, yeah, you
hey,
can
let, me, just, let me say one thing. Let me say one thing. Even Tom, the note man, who's, you know, superb at taking notes, going to be struggling with this one because this is a long note-taking session.
Yeah, well, he's going to have to rewind the podcast a few times to get every word I say down. It's all crucial. Unless you want to buy my book, it's all in there. And then,
There's the plug.
Then you don't have to listen.
There's a plug.
All right, so anyway, so yeah, you can keep it in an online wallet, as you're suggesting, which is more convenient, but of course is at least hypothetically susceptible to hacking. Anything that's online can theoretically be hacked. It depends, you know, what the online wallet is, how good the security is. You have to compare the different wallets. There are websites like Crypto Compare who are quite good at helping you to kind of work out which wallets are probably safer than others, blah, blah, blah. Or you can, if you're trading on an exchange like Binance, which is the world's biggest cryptocurrency exchange, it's largely unregulated. It's not by any means a safe thing because it started in China, Binance, and it could, you know, who knows, it could go bust at any time. The Chinese government could confiscate their assets. Who knows?
Sounds perfect.
Yes, but they've been going for years and they're the biggest exchange in the world. And what I have talked about in the book and what I still do is I will trade on exchanges like Binance, but I will put relatively small amounts of money into each exchange so that if one of them went bust, I wouldn't have to cry all day because it would only be a very small amount of my, or a relatively small amount of my money that was being lost. I use margin, I use leverage on those exchanges in order to make to take the small amount of money that I've put on the exchange and then multiply it enormously in terms of the bet that I placed. Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency. There's more advanced stuff, so I probably shouldn't go too much into that now, and it's not stuff I'd recommend for beginners, but that's one way that I get around that problem. Now, let's talk about Revolut and PayPal, because as you rightly pointed out, PayPal are now going to allow people to buy Bitcoin. You can do that in America now. British customers, I checked it yesterday, we still can't buy Bitcoin through PayPal. But we will be able to, and the beauty is that we will be able to use that Bitcoin to pay for anything. Like, literally, they will convert it into pounds to pay for anything that you want to buy using PayPal the internet.
Glenn,
sometime in the next couple of months, it'll come online, I'm
Glenn,
sure.
Come
Revolut
on.
Already,
I want a date.
If you've got an account with Revolut, you can already buy Bitcoin using your Revolut account, as some people I know do. There is one.
What's Revolut? What
there
is
are
that?
A couple of. Revolut is one of those new challenger banks in the UK.
Oh, okay.
All the young people are using Revolut, Justin. The young people. And basically,
I'm not young, am I? I'm nearly getting on for 50, Glenn.
The disadvantages of Revolut are, and this will be the same with PayPal, you can't take your Bitcoin out and put it in an external wallet. You can't move your Bitcoin to your own private wallet, you know, offline. You can't put it on your ledger. You can't do anything like that. Basically, when you buy through PayPal or Revolut, that's it. You know, you have to keep your Bitcoin with them forever, which is a major disadvantage as far as I'm concerned. And also, Revolut, despite being a British bank, their cryptocurrencies are not regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, and so you're not protected by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme if Revolut were, say, to go bust or something like that. You know, because your money in the bank or even with investments in the UK, you're covered usually by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. But cryptocurrencies don't fall under that umbrella. So even if you're buying through a bank like Revolut, you're not going to be covered in case of them not giving you your money back because they go bust or something like that.
Yeah, okay. All I got here is I did look it up because I didn't get an accurate answer from you, Glenn, but I apologise to you because it's very vague as well. This is from the BBC. PayPal plans to roll out buying of options in the US for the next few weeks. This was published on the 21st of October. And then with a full rollout due early next year. So I assume quarter one, maybe next year, if everything goes as planned. That will, I think, do you know what? That's a very bullish move for... It's a very bullish sign, signal. I was thinking about something to set something off, else off. It's a something that sets something else off. When you're the author, Glenn, when you
catalyst,
yes, very, because if you look at how many people are on PayPal. Wow, that's a big audience. Now, I will probably buy some. Even though I've got a Coinbase account already, I've got to transfer money from there to there to there and back. PayPal is linked to my bank account straight away. I'll probably buy a bit of Bitcoin there if it dips, you know? That's access there is very easy, isn't it?
Convenience makes a big difference, yeah. I agree with you entirely. And that's why people I know have bought it through Revolut and through no other means.
What's Revolut? What's Revolut, Glenn?
It's a bank.
Oh, sorry, yeah, I forget about that. Yeah, sorry, I'm a bit old. 200,
yeah, I totally
look at that.
Groovy.
Look at that. 300 million active users on PayPal. That's a big audience.
That is. And as you say, loads of them will just kind of go, oh, I might as well buy a bit of Bitcoin because it's easy, quick and easy. Yeah. Convenience makes such a big difference. And with the price of Bitcoin now trading, I mean, as I speak, it's at almost 19,000. It popped over the 19,000 this morning. And bear in mind, 20,000 or just below was the all-time high. So I've been watching this price like a hawk for about a week now as the price of Bitcoin has just kind of oscillated around that $19,000 level. Will it break that level and go to massive new all-time highs? Or will all the selling pressure, which we're now seeing at this level, kick in and push it back down a bit? I don't know. But I'm still holding my Bitcoin. Put it that if that tells you anything, the Bitcoin.
Well, it tells us you're still holding it.
The Bitcoin holdings that I bought. Yeah, I suppose. The Bitcoin holdings that I bought around about $10,000-$11,000, which was a couple of months ago. Now we've talked about it on the podcast in the past. I'm still holding that.
You've sold a couple of times, haven't you? Gone back in. That was
earlier. You're thinking of like August, September. Yeah, the beginning of October, I think, was like the very last time I bought. And I've held. So I've held for like a couple of months so far. And I'm going to keep holding until I see signs of weakness because, as we've discussed before, I'm a trend-following trader, which means that I tend to buy once a trend is already just established. I try and buy early in a trend and then follow it all the way up, and it's only when I see signs of serious weakness that I'll sell. And so far, we haven't seen any signs of serious weakness. If you look at the chart with your own eyes, say a four-hourly chart or a daily chart, all you'll see is just it goes up and up and up and up. So strength, incredible momentum. I'm not ready to sell yet because, you know, it could potentially go a lot higher and I don't want to miss out on those gains. But if it starts looking really weak and goes below...
Just hold it, Glenn, and top up more. What are you worried about?
Well, once something's gone up,
don't be
by
a dirty
100%.
Trader. Top up.
If it's almost doubled in price in just the space of a few months,
yeah, but did you believe
this
is going,
for any asset? If something doubles in price, it can quite often go down by 50% as just a correction before it then goes up even further. So I guess I'm kind of thinking I'd quite like to ride the up and then get out before the big down, and then
buy more. Just mortgage the house again. Buy more on the dips,
and not sell at all, even if it goes down.
Never
50%.
Sell. Be like Plan B. You know, all those maniacs, Bitcoin maniacs.
Yeah, but they're maniacs, as you say. It's like a religion to them.
They've done very well, haven't
they? It's never going to go down.
They've
done well because it has gone up for years and years. If you look at the very long term, I mean, obviously it's had its 80% declines in between, which is, you know, that's what my whole book was about, trying to avoid the 80% declines. It's like, why sit through an 80% decline, lose 80% of your money, just so that a couple of years later it could go back up again to where you bought it? I mean, I'd rather get in low, sell high, and then wait for it to go low again, and then buy it again. It's, you know, get the profit twice that way.
Dirty, dirty trader.
It's just like, I'm not talking about buying and selling every day. I'm talking about like holding for months at a time and then selling. And then holding for months at a time. It's long-term trading, really.
No, dirty. Right, on that note, I think we covered it all. Tom, you have to listen to this over and over again to take those notes there, even though you are the note man, and then you can share those notes with other people.
This entire podcast was for Tom's benefit. You realise that?
Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Speak to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five on the market, up 4% to 130. At four, Salt Lake Potash, having a bit of weakness of late. Could be opportunity, in some people's books. That's SO4, 3.42% down. On the market's up 4% to 130. Zoetic International up 21% after very good bullish RNS there about distribution centres and opening up there. 88,000 shops across America, potentially. That's up 21.5% to 53 pence. At 2, Director Plus, that's 12.5% down to 80.5. And at 1, Remote Monitored Systems, 8.27% down, 2.55. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. I'm just going to quickly get up the most viewed as well, just to compare them, if I can. Okay, top five. It is Vast Holdings and Companies. At 4, Bizant Resources, Exploration Drilling Progress and License Update. At 3, New Formix, Appointment of Non-Executive Director. At 2, Vesarian, $1.95 million Development Agreement. And at 1, Open Orphan, Directors change there and new NED come on board. Most viewed today is Zoetic, International Landmark Agreement to distribute products, of course. And they signed an agreement with this Asian American Trade Association Council that will bring its chill brand tobacco substitute and CBD products into tens of thousands of retail stores across the US. It could be over 88,000 partners or shops there across the US. It's a big distribution deal right there. That's why it's rising by a 20-odd% there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.